Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srimahari Das Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Ganga Maya Jumuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharni Nirvasesa Sanyavadi Pasca Chate Satarni. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha Vajra Pachivishcha Vipasindaveva Pachitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnavi Vidamo. So it's May 26, 2022, and where are we? We're in Virginia somewhere, right?
Ashburn.
Okay. Burning the ashes. Huh? As you drive here, you go by the Manasses, right?
Manasses.
Always. We would drive our kids up to the Rath Yatra and they would always say, "Look, Mata, the man has it." Dogs, hogs, camels, and asses right out of the car. So, Shankadari Prabhu was saying that you were reading about Dhruva Maharaj and you were discussing about empathy, yeah?
Yeah.
And you wanted maybe to discuss more. Is that right, that you wanted to discuss more about empathy? Maybe?
Yes.
Okay. I should tell you I'm very tired. So if I'm not so... If I forget something, I've been traveling all day and I'm a little tired. All right, so I was thinking we look at the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. And there's a few verses here, really. Starting with text 29. A true yogi observes me in all beings, and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. So, the basis of empathy is this connection, this oneness. You know, because Srila Prabhupada was Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paskaja Deshatarini, because he's defeating impersonalism and voidism, we tend to emphasize the difference. But there's also a oneness, Achintubhedabhe Tathatva. So we are not only all different and distinct personalities, but we also have a oneness, we also have a commonality. And this is what Krishna is saying. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Therefore I know that whatever good or bad I do to others, I'm actually really doing to myself. Yeah? And such a beautiful verse, text 30. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. This is kind of the essence of always remember Krishna and never forget him. That we see everything is in Krishna, and Krishna is in everything. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remain always in me in all circumstances. And then going to text 32, which is Atma Pangena Sarvatra, Samyam Pasyati Yorjuna, Sukham Va Yadi Va Dukam, Sa Yogi Padamo Matra. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. Prabhupada's purport. One who is in Krishna consciousness is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. So this is sort of the definition of empathy, isn't it? The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God. Now that one sentence there is quite profound, because we tend to believe that the cause of my distress is that I cut my finger, or somebody has insulted me, or my money's going down in the market, or I lost my job. Oh, I'm fine, thank you. But that was very thoughtful of you, thank you. And so we think that's the source of my distress. Does that make sense? Right? Some family member is upset with me, my boss is upset with me, my body's injured, I'm losing my money. That's the source of my distress. But Prabhupada's saying the cause is forgetfulness in his relationship with God. Now, if we think about the verses that we just read that led up to this, yeah, please, you can come forward, really. I'm not armed. It's fine. And I don't have a mic. That to see Krishna everywhere and to see everything in him, right? This was the verses before that. Right, that I just read. Everybody remembers that? Should I read them again? Yeah, we should read them again. It's Kali Yuga, we should read them again. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So, suffering is when I stop seeing things in relation to Krishna. I stop seeing that it's Krishna. Well, let's go on and see where Prabhupada takes this. And the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna. Now, Prabhupada's going to do what he often does. He's going to quote a verse without telling you what verse he's quoting. And so I'm going to ask you what verse he's quoting, and you're all going to know. Yes? You better all know. This is a very famous verse. And the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being. Anybody yet know what verse this is? The proprietor of all lands and planets. What verse? Yes, yes, yes. Very good. And the sincerest friend of all living entities. So he didn't say, I'm quoting, do you know the number? Chapter?
Five.
And where is it in the chapter?
Last verse.
Last verse. Good. Excellent. Can anyone tell me the Sanskrit? Can we say the Sanskrit? Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarvalokam maheshram suridam salabhutanam gyatramam shanti richiti. Now there Krishna is saying you attain peace, and here Prabhupada is saying you attain happiness. Does that remind you of any verse in the second chapter? Anybody? Relationship between peace and happiness? Remember where Krishna says, how can there be any happiness without peace? Yes? The basis of happiness is peace. I want you to think about this a little bit also in regard to what really causes distress and what really causes happiness. The perfect yogi, going on with the purport, the perfect yogi knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold material miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. Now, what that may sound like to us, and this is also true, is that because I willfully forget Krishna, therefore I engage in karma, therefore I get a material body, therefore I am in the material world, and therefore I have adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic, janmandara, etc. I have birth, death, old age, and disease, miseries from the body and mind, miseries from other living entities, miseries from nature. And that's true. That is a way you can look at it. Although it's almost like kind of a geographical way of looking at it. Like, I want to forget Krishna, so then I kind of go away, I'm in a different place, and then I do material things, and therefore I'm suffering because, like, I'm put into prison. Yeah? That works as an analogy and as a narrative. But that's not the only meaning here. Because, as Krishna's already said, if I see everyone in him and him in everyone, then I'm never lost to him and he's never lost to me and I'm always happy. And many, many times, Shastra and Srila Prabhupada will state that there's no material world for one who always sees Krishna. There's one lecture where Prabhupada said three times, there's no material world, there's no material world. There's, for the pure devotee, there's no material. So this means that if, and please try to understand this, because often we think, well, I'll just be good, I'll be a good devotee, and I'll remember Krishna, and I'll do everything right, and then, although there's difficulty in this life, I'll die, and I'll go to Goloka Vrindavan. And that's also a true narrative. But one could also say that if I see Krishna in everything in this world and I'm always remembering Krishna, then I will not experience the threefold miseries. Now that doesn't mean I won't break my arm. But it means I will not experience my broken arm as miserable. Why? Because I will see that everything is Krishna. And this is not just a philosophical construct. It's an experience. Okay, going on. And because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. So if you're experiencing a life whereby remembering Krishna, miseries are no longer miseries. Everything is happy. Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, Chapter 20, that for the materialist, everything is appears very aggressive. I may not be getting this exactly right. And to those who are in Krishna consciousness, everything is happily situated. So if you have this secret where the world becomes happy, even if you break your arm, even if someone steals your money, even if someone you love dies, then naturally, what do you want to do? You want to share it with everybody else. So Prabhupada says, because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. So this is very different from, I have the right religion and you don't, and therefore I am going to convert you to the right religion. Do you feel the difference? I'm happy. And I found the secret to being always happy through the ups and downs, and so I'd like you to have it too. You follow? Mm-hmm. Between this is right and you're wrong and I'm going to tell you. Right? That's a very different mood. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world, and he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. Nacha tasmin manusyeshu kashya me priya kritama. Anybody know where that's from? Very end of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says that the dearest person is one who is teaching others this message of the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities. This is a recurring theme. Always looks for the welfare of all living entities. Do materialistic-minded people do that? Do they always look for the welfare of all living entities? No. They have friends and enemies. Friends, enemies, neutral. And in this way, he is factually the friend of everyone, like Krishna is Suryanam Sarvabhutanam, so is a devotee. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. So envy means that I rejoice at others' unhappiness. You can have a nice house, that's fine, but not quite as nice as mine. You can have a nice career, but mine has to be a little better. Mm-hmm. You know, your spouse can be attractive, but mine has to be a little more attractive. Everything, you know, it's wanting to keep others down. That's envy. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man towards Krishna consciousness. So this is real empathy. Real empathy is we're all connected. We're all part of Krishna. All, everybody, not just people, animals, plants, and even inanimate objects, chairs, stones, clouds, everything is in Krishna. And Krishna is there. And therefore we're connected. And therefore I feel others' distress affects me in the sense that I care about it. And we have some idea of this in the sense of family, that if some family member is in distress, it feels like our distress. Yes, everybody has some sense like that. Right? In fact, if your child is injured, you might feel more distress than if you're injured. Because we have a sense of connection. Does it make sense to everybody? Yes? Child's body comes from the parent's body, and so you feel we are. But we're actually connected with everybody. And when we have that connection, we have genuine empathy. Then why would we want to have anyone else suffer? Even those who apparently are hurting us. It wouldn't make any sense. It would be like they say, cutting off your nose to spite your face. It'd be like, you know, wanting to hurt your own finger. Or, you know, we're all part of Krishna. But one can only feel this way if one sees Krishna everywhere and one has happiness in Krishna. Otherwise, one cannot feel this way. It's not possible to feel it artificially. And Prabhupada would make this point over and over and over and over again. We cannot see equality artificially. We cannot care about others' welfare artificially. It doesn't work. You know, there's so many ideas in the modern age of how to see everyone equally. Does it work? No, because materially we're not equal. Some of us are taller. Some of us are smarter. Some of us are richer. Some of us are stronger. It doesn't work. And Prabhupada would always talk about the United Nations as being a failure. And if you think about Prabhupada's upbringing, you know, he was born in the 1800s. And so he saw World War I in the League of Nations, and then World War II in the United Nations, and still so many wars are going on. Because if I don't see Krishna everywhere, and I don't see everything in Krishna, then I'm always feeling that there's a lack within me. I'm missing something. I need something to fill that gap in me because I don't see Krishna everywhere. And I'm thinking I'm going to fill it with money, with food, with whatever, relationships in this world, status. And none of it is satisfying, isn't it? We're in a time of unparalleled prosperity and unparalleled anxiety and mental illness. But if I'm feeling that I'm needy, I need things, I'm empty, I'm incomplete, I don't see that Krishna's everywhere and everything, then I'm thinking there's not enough of everything. You can't have as much or more than I do because there won't be enough for me. I'll be left out, and I'll suffer. And I'm in a constant state of fear that all of the things that I think are bringing me happiness are all tottering. Our bodies are very fragile, even those of you who are young, and you think maybe they're not, but they are. You know, just some little slip and fall, and you can be paralyzed for life. I mean, right? Are we going through this pandemic? Some microscopic virus shut down the whole world. So our bodies are very fragile, our minds are very fragile. Again, you just, you know, get a bad hit to your head and you can lose your memory, lose your knowledge. One of my former students, her son, he got a brain tumor when he was 14. And he was already in college at 14, and all of a sudden he couldn't read anymore. Thankfully, he recovered. But it's like that, right? Even the mind is fragile, and our relationships are fragile. Yes, are our relationships fragile? there can be estrangement. You can have a loving spouse and then, I don't love you anymore, goodbye, I'm getting a divorce. You'd be estranged from your children even, or your friends, or societies. You know, some of you, if you're not citizens, you know, you might think, oh, get some crazy government that'll throw you out. Isn't it? So these things are all very fragile, and so we're constantly afraid, and we're not able really to empathize. And that's what happened to Suruchi. Suruchi was very afraid of her own position. I mean, was she really going to be threatened by this little boy? Of course, he was the son of the elder queen. So if her husband liked him, then he would become the king. And she's thinking, then my position, of course, we had a similar situation with Kaikei. You know, then my position will be threatened, and I won't get what I want. And that's the whole basis of the lack of empathy for others, and the lack of connection with others. I get disconnected from Krishna, I get disconnected from reality, and then I think, you know, I'm alone, and I need so many things in order to be happy, and I have to get them for myself, and therefore I don't want you to have them, and I'm constantly in a state of fear that everything I'm depending on for my happiness is fragile, because it is. Yeah? My home, my bank balance, my education, my health, my relationships, at any moment. And we all know this. We think, well, it won't happen to me, I hope. But on the other hand, if we see Krishna everywhere and in everything, then we know, and we know he's the controller of everything, he's the enjoyer of everything, and he's my best friend, that the person who's controlling and owning everything loves me infinitely and would never harm me. And if I know, going back to the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Nahanite Hanumane Shri, that I can't be harmed. My body can be broken, my mind can be broken, all my relatives can hate me, some thief can steal all my money, my house can burn down, but it doesn't matter because I'm the soul and I'm eternal. Then one has no fear. And then one sees that everywhere is happiness. And in that state, one can certainly want to share that happiness with others and be the real well-wisher of others. And that's what Prabhupada means by being the best philanthropist. One can actually want to do good for others. Others cease to be a threat to oneself. There is no threat. Like Prahlad Maharaj said to his father, he said, your only enemy is your own mind. Yes? Your own senses, your own mind, that's your only enemy. You're thinking, this person is my enemy, that person is my own 5-year-old kid is my enemy. That it's all in your mind. And in fact, in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, Lord Brahma says like this, Maya is just within the mind. It's a way of seeing reality, a way of perceiving reality, where God appears to be absent. Things appear to be lacking. Things appear to be scary, dangerous. Padam, padam, vyadbi, padam. And Krishna consciousness is the opposite. One sees that everything is joyful. One sees everything is complete. Om pranamada pranamidam pranam pranam pranasate purnasya pranamandaya pranam eva vasishtate. Everything is complete. Everything is happy. Everything is loving. And what appears to be a catastrophe is not. And from that state, one can be empathic. From that state, one can really be connected. Now, of course, there's degrees. It's not like, thankfully, it's not like, you know, we're just totally in illusion or we're totally pure. And we see this with Dhruva. The Dhruva sees the Lord, he gets this benediction of going to Vaikuntha, and he still kind of messes up, doesn't he? Yeah? He loses it. It always struck me as interesting that he knew that his stepmother and stepbrother, half-brother, stepmother and half-brother were going to die. It was told to him by the Lord. It wasn't unexpected at all. And they were killed by one yaksha, and still he lost it. So this can give us some solace, that even though I'm progressing in Krishna consciousness, I might forget sometime. I might need to be reminded by someone superior. Oh, Dhruva, remember when you were 5, you pleased the Lord by your austerities? You don't need to do this, you know. That's okay that we mess up sometimes. If Dhruva can mess up, we can mess up. It's okay. I mean, not that we should intentionally mess up. But we want to see that we're at least generally with an upward trajectory. You know, there's some plateaus and there's going to be some backsliding. That's expected. But we should be heading in this direction where we see everything is Krishna and everything is loving. And our anxiety, our fearfulness is starting to decrease, and our ability to be everyone's genuine well-wisher, even those who appear to be our enemies, even those who appear to be trying to hurt us or something. So is that all right? So any questions, discussions? If you have questions about other things, we can also look at other things. But yes.
Yeah, thank you very much, Shyamma. This is really amazing that how you connected 6th chapter to empathic communication, empathy. It's, I never see it that way.
Well, I could actually, now that you said that, I was talking about empathy. Would you like me to take one more step and connect it to actually techniques of empathic communication?
Yes.
Would you like me to do that?
Yeah.
So empathic communication is basically where you identify what your feelings and needs are and the other person's feelings and needs. It's a way of stepping back from the onslaught of the gunas. It's basically a technique, like Krishna says in the 2nd chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, you know, by contemplating you develop attachment from attachment, lust, right? You all know that? Contemplation, attachment, lust, then? Anger, then?
Memory.
Not quite yet. Well, but we'll remember.
Yeah. Sangatse sohajayate, sangha sandhyate kamaha, kama pradabhijayate, pradabhod samoha, samoha smadhi vibrahma, sudhi brahsya brahvik, buddhinasa, buddhinasa pranasetna.
Buddhinasa. You've lost your intelligence. Okay. Does anyone know the next verse, 264? Everybody knows 62 and 63, but does anyone know 64? It's a good verse. This is a verse, Vaisheshika Prabhu likes to chant this before prasadam because it says you get Bhagavat prasadam in that verse. But the verse is not talking about samosas. Krishna there says, if you're free from attachment and aversion and you regulate your senses, you will get Bhagavat prasadam. So he's talking about a mental discipline of being free from attachment and aversion, a physical discipline of controlling the senses, and then you get mercy, because we need mercy. Just controlling the mind and controlling the senses isn't sufficient. So empathic communication is a way of controlling the mind. It's very connected to being free from attachment and aversion. What generally happens is that our bodies react to various circumstances with a release of chemicals that we then experience as an emotion. Okay, everybody following me? There's some stimulus in our environment, and our brain releases certain biochemicals, and we identify those as an emotion. Now, often, we don't really take a step back and identify the emotion, we just feel it. Okay? So we're feeling this rush of various biochemicals, we feel it, and then we create thoughts to either justify how we're feeling or try to deny what we're feeling. This is the general way that people behave. Okay? And then on the basis of that, we act. So what nonviolent communication does is it's a way, there's many other ways of doing this too, that's not the only way, but it's a way of stepping back and saying, what am I feeling? Putting a label on it. I am feeling excited. I am feeling afraid. I am feeling ashamed. I am feeling worried. I am feeling inspired. What am I feeling? And how is that related to my needs? Needs is something that if they're not fulfilled, there's some consequence. So our ultimate needs are satchitananda. Our ultimate needs are to live, to understand, and to have joy. And then there you can have branches out from them, like peace and autonomy and love and play and things like that. But other than needs for things like food and water and shelter, all of the needs are ultimately spiritual. And even needs for physical existence is related to the spiritual need to exist. And then I step back and I see, oh, there's some relationship to my needs. Either I'm feeling that my needs are met or I'm feeling my needs are unmet. And if it's what we call a negative emotion, that my needs are unmet, then I go, wait a minute, how do I actually meet my needs? The way I really meet my needs is spiritual. I cannot ultimately meet my needs materially. It just doesn't work. Good luck. Give it a good try. But it doesn't really work. And then I can step back. And then I become free from attachment and aversion to the various thoughts and feelings that are going through the body. And they just go through like rivers going into the ocean. And the ocean is not affected. And within a few seconds or utmost a few minutes, it's passed through me. Now, understanding that allows me to be connected to others. Because other people are having the same thing. There's various stimulants in their environment, which then trigger the release of various biochemicals, and the person then feels a particular way. And they may not even identify how they're feeling. They just start having thoughts that either try to justify how they're feeling, or they have thoughts that are trying to repress how they're feeling, and then they act on the basis of that. And often we respond to that with the other person. Well, what are they saying? What are they doing? Instead of saying, okay, what are they feeling? And if they're feeling something negative, which of their needs are they trying to meet here? And how can I help them to meet that need spiritually? And if I can't help them, at least I can understand, like George Harrison wrote for the Forward for Krishna book, everyone's looking for Krishna, some don't know that they are, but they are. And I relate this very much to rasa theology. That Srila Prabhupada writes in the preface to Nectar of Devotion, that everything we're doing is being motivated by a desire to taste rasa. Now some of the rasas appear to be like, you know, there's the ghastly rasa, there's the fear rasa, there's the lamentation rasa, there's the anger rasa. So if you're angry at Kaliya, that's ecstatic. If you're scared that Krishna's in Kaliya's coils, that's ecstatic. But if you're angry because someone took your parking space, that's not ecstatic. But it's an attempt to enjoy. People are actually enjoying that. Do you follow? Because it's a rasa. So empathic communication means I understand that whatever anyone is doing, they're trying to enjoy rasa, to meet this their basic needs of connection with Krishna. And I can connect with them on that level. Oh, here's a fellow jiva that wants to enjoy rasa. Instead of interacting with them on the very superficial level. It's an amazing, Prabhupada talks about techniques of spiritual life. In the first purpose of ISKCON, it's an amazing technique of spiritual life to move back from this attachment and aversion. and to see how everyone's looking for Krishna. And that people are suffering because they're trying to get rasa separately from Krishna. They're trying to get their needs met separately from Krishna. That's why they're suffering. Because they're not seeing Krishna everywhere. That doesn't, I mean, we also have to put their broken arm in a cast, but that's not, the broken arm isn't the source of their pain. In fact, if they were seeing Krishna everywhere, they would not experience it as pain at all. And then even if I can't help someone, and I can't connect with them externally, I can always connect with them from within my heart. And therefore I won't be disturbed by other people's disturbances. I can't always say to people, you know, you're trying to enjoy lamentation. You're just doing it in the wrong way. No, I'm not trying to enjoy it. I'm miserable. No, actually, you're trying to enjoy lamentation. But I can understand that. And therefore, I can have compassion. And I can care about bringing them also to happiness. Is that all right? Did I check it that step? Did you have a specific question?
I mean, the elaboration was very helpful, and I think it gave me more clarity, particularly the feeling the needs of myself, feeling the needs of others. My thought is, suppose if I don't connect to the other's needs and other's feelings and other's emotions, and then I'm only concerned about myself, I'm so much self-centered and my needs must be fulfilled. So where I'm heading in that situation, that's what is happening. I'm not able to connect to the other's feelings and needs, and I'm dealing with the people, and where am I heading at? What's the ultimate end result of doing that? Is it that
it's not a nice thing? No. I mean, it's not nice in the process, and it's not nice in the end. It's basically sad. Mm. It's unfortunate. But I don't think that's really what you want to know. You already know that it's an unfortunate and sad result of that.
So how do I move above that and be able to connect to the other's needs?
First I have to connect to myself. Mm. Like Krishna is saying in this verse in the sixth chapter, I understand others by in relation to my own self. So first I have to see, what's really going on with me? Am I taking the bodily situation as my own? Am I thinking it's me, or am I able to step back and be the observer? And say, well, that's interesting. Look at that. Someone says something insulting, and immediately my brain interprets that as a threat. You know, biologically, that is a threat. We're social animals, and if someone insults us, we might not get food. You know, like, you understand? If you're a herd animal, and the other animals in your herd don't like you, then you're going to lose your protection and your food. Yeah? Does that make sense to everybody? And we get more resources depending on how much status we have. Yes? You know the chief cows eat first. You all know that, right? Cows have a very heavy hierarchy. Did you know that? There's the top cow, and then there's the bottom cow, and then there's the cows in between. The top cow goes into the barn first and eats first. Seriously. And it's something like that in human society. Come on. We all know that. People with higher status get more resources. I was at an ecological convention in Hungary that the devotees were involved with, and this one non-devotee Hungarian professor gets up and says, and there weren't very many Americans there. He said, in Hungarian, I had a translator, the Americans are 5% of the population or something, and they're using 50% of the world's resources, And so we have to make sure those Americans stop reproducing. Seriously, that's what he said. We should make sure they stop having children so that we can have more of the world's resources for ourselves. You know, but this is, I was like, whoa. So, but this is the how we feel when we're social animals. You know? So if someone threatens my status, they're threatening my food on a biological, animalistic level. Are you all following me? Mm-hmm. So if somebody insults me, if someone says, Ermila, you're really stupid. You're really useless. I mean, I just don't see, why do you think you're anything? You're nothing. My brain interprets that like a tiger growling at me. It says, I'm in danger. Do you understand? Does everybody understand this? Why somebody insulting me to the brain feels like a tiger or a pack of dogs? Does everyone follow? Yes? And so my brain says, danger, 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 danger. And the sympathetic nervous system is activated. So I should be able to watch that and say, that's fascinating. Well, that's fascinating. This is a mechanism that Krishna has designed for my biological survival. But I'm not a biological entity. I'm not threatened, actually. And I don't need to respond to this chemical flood in my body. I just don't need to respond to it. I can just observe it. And what need is being threatened of mine here? Is it a need for love? Is it a need for security? Is it a need for understanding? Is it a need for autonomy? Which of my needs is being threatened here? Self-respect? Yeah, well, each person would be different in a different situation. But I'm saying we just ask ourselves that. And then say, how can I get that fulfilled spiritually? Often just recognizing what's going on is enough. Mm-hmm. Often just saying, oh. Sometimes just even putting a name on the emotion is enough because it gives you detachment. Instead of just feeling something, just to say, oh, I am feeling fear. Sometimes just that goes, oh. I am feeling anger. Be careful of I am angry. Because that's an identification. So be careful of language. You understand? Yeah. I am not angry. I am a soul. You understand? I am not ashamed. I am not afraid. I am a soul. Fear or shame or anger or grief or joy can be going through me. I can be experiencing those things. But I am not those things. So just even, oh, there's joy flowing through me right now. Oh, there's shame flowing through me right now. Oh, there's anger flowing. Oh, sometimes just that is enough to go, and just, oh, that's interesting. And sometimes, if it's really extreme, we may have to take a step back and say, oh, there's a lot of fear going through me right now. There's a lot of anger going through me right now. And underneath the anger, there's fear. And underneath the fear, there's shame. Actually, it's interesting. Rupa Goswami, in explaining the Vyavichari Bhavs, he taught in the Southern Ocean of Nectar of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he explains how spiritually even emotions can be nested within each other. So that's certainly also true materially. I can be feeling very angry because I'm embarrassed about something. Or I can feel very angry because I'm afraid of something. You understand? Or I can feel embarrassed because I'm angry. So, you know, they're related. They're related to each other. And then you go to what needs do I have that I feel are being threatened or that are not being met? So then you can take a step more. And then how can I meet that? How can I experience real rasa? Now, once I've done that with myself, and this doesn't have to take a lot of time. It might sometimes. Sometimes it may take sitting down and journaling about it for 45 minutes. Depends how serious a thing we're talking about. Sometimes it can be a 30-second thing that we can do. Sometimes it takes some time. Depends. Is this something long-standing that's recurring? Is it just something in the moment? Is it something that's... Is it kind of like a cascade? Is it something that's triggering something else that happened, you know, with my father or my childhood friend or my math teacher when I was two or not two, nine or... Sorry, I told you I'm tired. You know, is it something... Am I cascading to something else? Do you follow? And that might take some time to untangle it. But then I'm in a position to actually be empathic to others. As long as I'm swirling in my own emotions and needs and caught up in, I can't be empathic to others. I don't have the capacity. I just can't. If I try to be empathic and caring for others when I myself am caught up in the gunas, I actually don't have the capacity. It becomes a superficial social construct of some just learned behavior to appear empathic, because I think that will get me what I want in the world, but it's not real empathy. Because as long as I'm swirling like that, I'm going to be wanting to use others for my own purposes, to try to settle my own stuff. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah? This is not that hard. It may sound hard. It's not really that hard, but it does take some practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the aspects of sadhana, one of the first 10 aspects of sadhana that Rupa Goswami gives, not to be overwhelmed in joy and lamentation, not to be overwhelmed by the different emotions on the material level. That does not mean repression. No. Don't repress emotions. That's bad news. It will come back to bite you very hard. Very bad idea. Don't do that, please. Yes?
By using this technique, I can say probably, how can we show empathy towards ourselves and heal ourselves by being so self-aware of this, being self-aware about our emotions, how can we show
it? Oh, what a beautiful question. She's asking, in practicing these techniques, how can we care about ourselves? How can we love ourselves?
And heal ourselves and show empathy towards ourselves.
I'm not sure if I can get into that in depth. But in a very simple way, and some people will need more than what I'm going to give right now, because I just don't have the time tonight to go into it in depth. Just like what I see to others, they're a soul looking for Krishna. They're just looking for it in the wrong way. They're looking for to get rasa with Krishna's energy separate from him instead of trying to get rasa from Krishna. They're trying to meet their needs with Krishna's energy instead of trying to meet their needs with Krishna. It's like if I come into this house and I just start trying to enjoy everything in this house, separate from the owners, that wouldn't be pleasing. Oh, what a nice couch. I think I'll take that home. You know, if I'm friends with the owners of the house, then I can enjoy the couch as their couch. You follow? Yeah? So I can also see that I'm doing that. Not only can I see that others are doing that, I'm doing that. And I can have some kindness for myself. And treat myself as I would treat others kindly. Oh, you silly little misguided soul. How silly. You're so silly. This is foolishness. Why are you trying to eat the pitcher of pizza? Why don't you eat the pizza? So silly. How would you comfort a foolish child? And you can just say, you know, it's okay. It's okay, Ramila. I know you're just want to love Krishna and be loved. I know. And sometimes you just really mess up with how you try to do that. It's all right. Krishna already loves you infinitely. You already have love for Krishna. It's just a question of uncovering it. If Dhruva messed up, you can mess up too. It's all right. Pick yourself up. Shake yourself off. Let's go on. Now, let's see. How can we actually get this need met with Krishna, and how can I actually experience rasa with Krishna? Let me try for it. Let me make a step forward at least. It's that simple. It's really that simple. And you want to avoid things like, you're a fool, you're an idiot, you never do anything right. Why do you do this? Why do you do that? Oh, that we'll talk to ourselves the way we would never talk to another person.
Like, if I understood correctly, is it like not to be too harsh on ourselves and always be enthusiastic to serve?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of research. It's interesting that people who are really harsh on themselves are more likely to keep making the same mistake than people who are kind to themselves. We're so terrified that if I'm kind to myself, then I'll just be wishy-washy. But it's not like that. I mean, if you can think, if you've ever made a mistake where someone else had justification for being harsh with you and they weren't, can any of you think of when somebody was really kind to you? If you can think about a time when you really messed up and the other person was kind, even though they could have been angry. And how did you feel? You felt obliged to them. And you felt inspired to get it right the next time. Isn't it? And now think of a time when you messed up and somebody was really harsh with you. How did you feel? Embarrassed, ashamed, angry maybe? Generally, you just wanted to avoid that person in the future. It's like, well, I'm not going to admit my mistakes to you anymore. Right? So we're much more likely to respond to kindness. That doesn't mean you have to be wishy-washy and say everything you do is okay. You know, you can say, okay, you messed up. All right, that's normal that you're going to mess up. You're a human being in Kali Yuga. If you don't mess up, that would be extraordinary. Okay, now what? Now where are we going to go from here? And how can we try to love Krishna 1% more now? 2% more. How can I at least go forward? Is that okay?
Yes.
And Krishna says, "What Atma Rati, Atma Rama." Of course, there's there. Atma Tushta. One should be happy in the self, satisfied in the self. Have Atma Rati, love for the self. Not the foolish mind and body, that's ridiculous, but the real self. Actually, if we're cruel to ourselves, first of all, if ever you see someone else being cruel to themselves, is it a nice thing? If you hear someone talking about themselves, oh, I'm terrible, I never do anything right, is that pleasing? If you have children, if your children were talking to themselves like that, would you like that? So we're part of Krishna. You know, if we're very critical of ourselves, then we're also very critical of a part of Krishna. The demons are envious of their own self. Be careful. In the name of humility and in the name of strictness, to actually be harming ourselves. Or austerities that harm the self also give pain to the supersoul. So hold ourselves to a high standard and go to a high standard, but with kindness, please. And in a way that's beneficial. The 5 austerities of speech, one of them is beneficial. So we should speak to ourselves beneficially too. Instead of, you're a stupid idiot, you always mess up. I knew you'd mess up. That's all you ever do is mess up. We can say, okay, look. You forgot this thing that time. All right, that wasn't very good. And I know you've forgotten things in the past. Okay, well, can we think of a plan, please, to try to remember this in the future? That's a beneficial way of talking to yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes? Anything else?
So how we can our mind will react because of Bhagavad Gita, they said, Krishna said, Sarvasachaham Kudisan Nivishto, Matas Mulis, Yanamako Hayamcha, Ishwara Sarvabhotanam. So if that is the case, Krishna is there inside and giving the instruction to do this work, okay? He is running, he is telling and doing all the work. And that is, if that is the case, why the people are doing the lot of bad things, that is number one. And number
okay,
two,
well wait, let's one at a time. What are what are the five factors of action?
Five factors of the action?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
I think it's 18th chapter, yeah?
Yeah.
No, you find it. I'm tired, you find it.
And some people saying that Krishna will give you 5% of freedom to you. Okay, he will not involve. Okay, you do whatever.
I think it's 18th chapter.
Whatever you work, he is not going to interfere. Okay? That is one thing.
And did you find it? Okay, well, let's get one step at a time. Okay, can you read that? Five factors of action?
The place of action, the body, the performance, the various senses, and mainly different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul. These are the five factors of action.
Okay, the place, the endeavor, the senses, the performer, and the super soul, correct? Am I correct? Did I get that right? So Krishna is one of the five factors, not all of them. Otherwise, we're just puppets.
So remaining we act based on the mode of nature, the how they are that time, that means whether it is sattvaguna or rajoguna or tamoguna, based on that one he will react?
Correct.
Okay.
If you are materially identifying, correct.
If materially identifying.
Correct. Okay. If you're not materially identifying, you'll observe the gunas, but they will not control you. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear, knowing that the modes alone are active, remaining always neutral. 14:22-25, can you read? 14:22.
Read?
Please.
Translation?
Yes, please.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear.
Okay, stop right there for a minute. So who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, nor long for them when they disappear, yeah?
Who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
Thank you. So these are the modes I'm just observing. Sometimes the body and mind are illuminated, sometimes they're attached, sometimes they're deluded. I don't long for them or hate them. I remain neutral. Such a person is not influenced by the modes of nature. Their actions are on a different platform.
But sattvaguna should be always, if that is the case, sattvaguna, he has more sattvaguna.
This is someone even detached from sattvaguna.
Okay, that means sattva?
Yes. Okay. Sattvaguna is also a false ego.
Okay.
Sattvaguna false ego is, I am very spiritual. I'm very much in balance. I'm really in harmony with the world. I'm merciful and empathic and forgiving. And I'm in balance with nature. I'm better than all those people who are striving for ambition in the world. So that's sattvaguna ego. And then rajaguna is, I am righteous. I am good. I work for justice. I build hospitals. I build schools. I'm a philanthropist. I'm building society, art museums, philosophy. Maybe my name will be in the history books and my statue will be in the park. I am a good person. I'm a religious person, maybe. And I want you to notice. And I work hard, too. I sacrifice a lot. I do a lot of hard sacrifice to get what I've gotten. And I'm willing to work harder and harder and harder to change the world. That's Rajagun ego. And Tamagun ego is, you know, I'm not ambitious. People running around. I mean, you know, I do my work, I come home, I drink my beer, I watch the football game, I pet my dog, I go to bed. You know, I'm good at my work, okay? You know? And look, you know, I'll eat an Impossible Burger. If they sell it at McDonald's for the same price as the beef burger, well, sure, I'll eat it. If it's more expensive, forget it. You know, I'm easy. Cut my chair. It's fine. I'm better than all these ambitious people around. Who do they think they are? These people. So it's all ego. It's just different degrees and types of ego. Now, sattva ego, it's a funny ego, because although sattva ego is the closest to spirituality, it also conditions you to a sense of happiness and knowledge. You think, I'm so happy. I know things. And so someone says, chant Hare Krishna, you go, why? I'm already so spiritual. Whereas you go to someone in Rajagun and you say, chant Hare Krishna, and they go, yeah, maybe I should. I'm really in anxiety running around. Do you follow? So sometimes people in Rajagun and Tamagun are more receptive to spirituality because they know that they're suffering. And people in Sattvagun think they have it all together spiritually. So Sattvagun is funny because it's right next to the spiritual. But it's still egotistical. You follow?
Yeah.
Now, someone who's a real spiritualist has a life that looks very much like a Sattvagun life. But it's not really influenced by Sattvagun. Because their mood is Jivara Swarupaya Krishna Nityadas. I'm a servant to Krishna, I'm a soul. I'm not better than anybody. I'm just happy to be an insignificant. You please consider just making a little dust. I'm happy being just a little dust. Anybody else? Yes.
Actually, when you mentioned about we don't know what is our emotion about most of the time, I think that is very profound. Is to know like what we are exactly feeling, what is our emotion is about. That is very nice. And one question I wanted to ask behalf of my daughter, I think. So sometimes she says that her class teacher is not fair, her friends are not fair. We both gave same answers, but she gave some marks to that girl more. And she went and asked, but they did not. So that I tried to tell her we want to see the soul, but it doesn't go deep into her.
Well, is this your question or your question?
She's a little shy to ask me. No.
Is there something you'd like to ask? No? Would you like to be able to feel happy even with unfair teachers and unfair students?
It's not that. It's more like sometimes they talk about their workload a lot, and they give us the workload, but they expect us not to complain, and then they complain to us about it.
So the teachers complain about their workload,
but they expect us not to complain.
And they expect you not to complain about your workload.
I shouldn't think.
Well, it isn't. When people are complaining about their workload, can you guess whether that's sattva, rajas, or tamas? Anybody have any idea? When people are going on and on about how hard they work and how much they sacrifice,
rajas.
That's rajas. In Rajagun, people work, 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 a little enjoyment. Work, 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 a little enjoyment. Maybe. Maybe not. Like I planted some marigolds and the slugs ate them. I didn't get the fruit. I mean, the flowers. I wasn't trying to get fruit, but flowers. I mean, and I wanted them for my deities, but I didn't get any because the slugs ate the plants. So I worked, right? I had to get the money. I had to go to the store. I had to buy the plants. I had to put on the landscaping film. I had to put on the mulch. I had to dig the hole. I had to get the fertilizer. I had to put in the fertilizer, and I put in the plants, and I watered them, and I did all the work to get my result, and I didn't get my result because the slugs ate them. So work, 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 maybe a result, maybe. And so if you get the result, you might not even like it. Like I planted some other plants, I forget what they're called, that are perennials, and I thought, why should I just keep planting annuals? Let me plant some perennials. And they're kind of marigold looking, but they, I don't know, they're just not really nice. They keep getting all dirty from the soil, and then they rot really quickly if I don't pick them right away, and so, you know, there was like, again, I had to get the money, and I had to go to the store, and I had to buy the plant, and I dig the hole, and I dig the fertilizer. And I got the flowers, the slugs didn't eat that, but I don't like them. So Rajas is like this. So how are people in Rajas going to feel happy? It's a problem, because if you're in Rajas, you're spending this much time working hard and sacrificing for this much fruit. And sometimes you don't get the fruit, because the slugs eat them. And sometimes you get the fruit, but you don't like it. Am I clear? You get what you wanted. And have you ever ordered something in the mail and you get it and you're like, I don't like it? Okay. So the majority of the time for a person in Rajas, they're working hard. Like people in Sattva are generally just happy. People in Tamas are generally miserable. And people in Rajas, they're working for this fruit. But they're very frustrated because they're putting out this much work for this much fruit that they might not even get or they might not like. So what they're doing is they're trying to enjoy their hard work. Are you following me? Because we're in Annamaya Vyasa, we want to be happy. So I'm trying to enjoy my hard work. And one of the ways I do that is by complaining about it. Because that way I can feel that I'm a very good person. Remember in Rajas, you want to feel I'm a good person because I work hard and I sacrifice a lot and I'm doing good for the society by my hard work. It's very Rajas. And Rajas, I want acknowledgement for my hard work and my sacrifice and my difficulty because my life is mostly that. In Tamas, your life isn't that because you're so lazy. And in Sattva, your life isn't like that because you're getting happiness from within, or at least from the mind and the intelligence. But in Rajas, you're getting happiness all externally, but you're not getting much of it. You're just working. So, compassion. A person who's doing that is basically their life is miserable, with a little spark of happiness here and there. And so they're trying to get happiness by glorifying their sacrifice. And one of the ways they do is to complain about their sacrifice. Does that make sense to you? I'm working so hard for you. I'm doing this for you, and I'm doing that for you, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that for you. That's their way of trying to enjoy their misery. And what they're looking for from you, because it's Rajas, oh, great and powerful teacher who is sacrificing so much for my welfare. All glories to you. All glories to you. That's what they're looking for. And how does our brain take it? Again, we're social creatures, and the teacher has a higher position of status, so the teacher can control, apparently, materially, whether or not you get a good grade, and that apparently controls what status you're going to get in society, which apparently controls how much money you're going to make, which apparently controls how much you're going to enjoy, and how much food you're going to get, and what kind of house you're going to have. And here's this high-status person who's controlling whether or not you're going to live, according to you, like the primitive brain. So when this high-status person is saying, respect me for all my hard work, you're feeling it's a threat. And so you're going, what about my hard work? What do you mean your hard work? I work hard too. So instead, go to compassion. Wow, this person is miserable. If you're in sattva, at least in sattva, then you're going to be enjoying all the work you do. It's not going to be hard work and it's not going to be sacrifice. Right? 424, everything merges into transcendence. Then you're going to think, wow, it's a joy correcting my students' papers. By the way, when I was a full-time teacher, it was taking me 3 to 4 hours a day to correct everybody's work. I was spending as much time correcting papers and lesson planning as the students were doing at homework, probably more. So, you know, but if you're seeing that that is also a joy, in sattva, everything becomes a joy. In sattva, the distinction between sacrifice and fruit disappears. That at every moment, you're feeling some connection, usually more of a Brahman idea or like that. And what to speak of in bhakti? In bhakti, you're saying, wow, this moment is for Krishna, and this moment is for Krishna, and this moment is for Krishna, and this moment is for Krishna. Wouldn't it be nice if my teacher could feel that? Now, I may not be able to do anything to get my teacher to feel that, but at least I can understand, if only, it's a shame that my teacher isn't taking joy in her lesson planning and her paper correcting. How sad. How sad that her joy is some superficial, very periodic thing. And that she feels she has to get happiness from me acknowledging all of her suffering. It's a shame. And to try to live our own life so that every moment is a joy and that there is no distinction between sacrifice and fruit, that it's all fruit. Instead of getting caught up in the same rajas or self. Or in tamas, where I just become angry and I just become insulting because I feel threatened. Is this easy? Yes, once you practice. Is it easy in the beginning? No. It takes some practice, and you will sometimes fail, and that's okay. But as Krishna says in 264, if you give up attachment and aversion and you control your senses, you will get Bhagavad Prasadam, which again doesn't mean like sweet rice. It means you get his help. So if you make an attempt to step back from this and say, what's really going on here? If you make an attempt, even if you're only partially successful, even if sometimes you're an abject failure and you're angry and you come home and you throw your book against the wall and it takes you an hour to get yourself back on track. But if you get yourself back on track and you make an attempt, then Krishna says, oh, how lovely. Somebody's making an attempt and he will help you. And gradually it'll become easier and easier and easier and easier and easier. And you'll see people like this with compassion. Wow. This person is totally unnecessarily making themselves miserable. If this person is really in the career that's according to their nature and the career that they love, then they should be feeling joy in all the aspects of their career. How unfortunate. Let me at least find joy in everything in my work. Let me see Krishna everywhere and everything in him. And find him everywhere and see everything as joyful. Let me not fall into this rajas, which is, it's not a nice place to be. Does that help at all? When you first try this, it may be hard. But I remember the first time that I tried this, it was really, really, really hard. I was in the other position. I was in the position of teacher, and I had parents yelling at me. So I wasn't the student with the teacher yelling at me. I was the teacher with the parents yelling at me. And I just, in my mind, reached out a little bit in this direction. A little bit. Just slightly. Immediately I got mercy. I mean, it was a tiny attempt, but I was flooded with peace. And I was like, whoa. Can I do it perfectly all the time? No. But when I mess up, do I realize what the problem was, at least at some point? Oh, wait a minute. It wasn't this other person. It's me. And if it's me, then I can do something about it. Now what can I do about it? And I can pick myself off, shake myself off, and go on. But the more you practice, the easier it gets, the more mercy that you get, and the more and more it becomes one's natural response, which it actually is a natural response for the soul. So the more and more one feels it as a natural response. Okay? We should end now. Thank you. I hope anything good that I said is all due to Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas. Anything foolish that I said is all my responsibility. Please take the good things, and please don't copy the bad. And if I quoted something wrong or whatever because I'm tired, please excuse me. So thank you very much for this opportunity. Prabhupada ki jai.